Hey, welcome to the first episode of Heads Down,
Two Thumbs Up.
Ah, I like that.
I know, it sounds so good.
It's gonna be good.
It's gonna be good. And of course, for those of you who already listened to the trailer, you know what we're gonna be talking about today. It's none other than
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I mean, we had no trouble landing on this. This is an iconic movie about one young man's relationship with school and how he takes the day off.
So I'm Bill Selleck, Director of Technology at Hillbrook School.
I am Carla Silver, the Executive Director of Leadership and Design.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
Ready for the vitals?
Yep. The film was actually released June 11th, 1986. For those of you who have never seen the movie, which I can't believe there are many of you, it was set in Chicago. And John Hughes, who directed the film, said that a lot of Ferris is sort of my love letter to the city. We'll be obviously delving into some of John Hughes's other films later on in this season. But, you know, most of his films were filmed in Chicago on location. And in this case, most of the school scenes were filmed at Glenbrook North High School. So.
And that was his high school, yeah?
I believe so, yeah. And of course, the movie also takes place throughout Chicago at the Art Institute, Wrigley Field, Sears Tower, downtown Chicago. So it really is a love letter to Chicago. It stars Matthew Broderick as Ferris Bueller. And just a quick bit of trivia. When this movie first came out, I was just such a diehard Matthew Broderick fan. I actually still have my program, my signed autograph program from when he was in Brighton Beach Memoirs on Broadway. So I had just seen him in that show on Broadway when this came out.
No way.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Mia Sara plays his girlfriend, Sloane Peterson. Alan Ruck plays Cameron Fry. Jeffrey Jones, the antagonist. Ed Rooney, Dean of Students. And Jennifer Grey, who was actually Matthew Broderick's girlfriend at the time, plays his sister, Jeannie Bueller. There are some other important characters, including his mother and father, Lyman Ward and Cindy Pickett, who actually met on the set and got married in real life later on. Edie McClung plays Grace, the secretary. Ben Stein, of course, in his epic role as the economics teacher.
Yes.
And Charlie Sheen makes a nice cameo at the end as a sort of a druggie and Jeannie's love interest.
Yes. Yeah, so the synopsis taken from IMDb. Are you ready for it?
Yep.
High school student Ferris Bueller wants a day off from school. That's the name of it. And he's developed an incredibly sophisticated plan to pull it off. He talks his friend Cameron into taking his father's prized Ferrari and with his girlfriend Sloane, head into Chicago for the day. While they're taking what the city has to offer, school principal, which is actually wrong,
Dean
of
wrong.
Students.
It is wrong.
Dean of Students Ed Rooney is convinced that Ferris is, not for the first time, playing hooky for the day and is hellbent to catch him. Ferris has anticipated that, much to Rooney's chagrin.
Hey, Bill, do you remember how many days Ferris has missed?
So far this semester, he has been absent 9 times.
9 times!
9 times. And then he goes in with his computer.
And gets it down to 2.
Gets it down to 2.
Yeah, yeah. But it's his 9th day off in 1 semester. So you can already get a sense of one of the key themes of the movie, which of course is how relevant is school? How
right.
important is it? Right.
Yeah.
So
I also just have a quick aside, playing hooky. My little sister played hooky once in elementary school.
Yeah.
And then told her teacher, she was like, I wasn't at school yesterday. I was off playing hockey.
It's a really common confusion. I actually did play hooky one time and I said something similar. I think I said, I played a game of hooky. So it's a common confusion.
Yeah. So Ferris also played a game of hooky.
So I'm just curious. I'm going to ask you, like, why was this your first choice?
Well, so you asked. You're like, why? Like, pick a movie about schools. A movie that, like, what comes to mind? It's like, dude, Ferris Bueller. No question. For me, like, the most iconic movie about a student, about an administrator, about the system of school. And it's really, you know, it's not just, hey, let's go and play. all along the bottom, it's this like administrator out to get him, mm-hmm. you know, like in classic antagonist role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think when I landed on this, we could have said it in like this exact synchronized moment, I think, when we picked this particular movie. But I just remember going to see this movie when it was released. I'm pretty sure that I saw it on opening weekend.
That's so cool.
I actually think I saw it twice because, you know, that's what you did in the day because you didn't really know when you were going to get a chance to see the movie again. So you would go to see it multiple times in the theater. So I think I saw it on opening weekend and I think I saw it with my dad. And I just remember just loving it and thinking it was just a perfect fantasy.
Yeah.
I had just finished my freshman year in high school.
Okay. So I was a little bit younger.
Yeah, you are.
I remember seeing it like, you know, HBO, like a summer vacation or something. We saw it then.
Thanks. You're making me feel just a little old.
No, I'm just a tiny bit younger. Just a little bit.
You know, some of the themes we just wanted to surface, really, some of the key things that we just find to be really resonant even today are, one, I mean, first and foremost, that the adult-adolescent relationships in the movie. I mean, it's pretty funny how adults are portrayed.
Absolutely.
In this movie.
Yeah, so both as like adversary, so everything Ferris wants to do, Rooney wants him to not do.
Right.
Everything the teachers want students to do, the students are not doing. But then also, the way you put it, is just adults as buffoon.
Oh my goodness. Whether it's his parents who are just clearly missing the boat. I mean, they have no idea that their son is pulling a stunt with them.
The key to faking out the parents is the clammy hands. It's a good non-specific symptom. I'm a big believer in it. A lot of people will tell you that a good phony fever is a deadlock, but you get a nervous mother, you could wind up in a doctor's office. That's worse than school.
Down to, you know, Grace.
You sounded like Dirty Harry just then.
Everyone is sort of foolish.
Yeah. Did you catch earlier in the movie where she pulled a pencil out of her ear? And then she pulled a second.
She just keeps pulling
a third pencil out of her ear. Yeah. Just the ridiculousness of adults.
Yeah, in general. Yeah. The second primary theme, for me at least, is just the lack of relevance of school.
Absolutely.
For students. I mean, these kids are bored in school.
It's on European socialism. I mean, really, what's the point? I'm not European. I don't plan on being European. So who gives a crap if they're socialists? They could be fascist anarchists. It still wouldn't change the fact that I don't own a car.
And you can't miss the one scene with Ben Stein, and we'll talk a little bit about it more. But I think that scene, I can't think of a teacher in America that hasn't at one point stood in front of their class and said, or thought, anyone.
I know that I've said Bueller more than once.
It's great.
Yeah.
Bueller.
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I guess it's pretty serious.
The other thing that's kind of relevant about it is to a certain extent, this movie to me feels a little bit like kind of an ode to experiential learning.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And we talk about it now all the time, but in getting students out in the city to learn. But it was like Ferris Bueller had that one figured out.
Yeah. Really what schools could have done is just gone, oh, that. Let's do that.
Let's send our kids out to play in the city and go to the art museum and
exactly
go to the ballpark. And you wonder how much learning was happening at school for the students versus what was happening for Ferris and his friends.
While he was doing all of those things.
Yeah. And the last one I just think was sort of interesting. And of course, as we go through the film a little bit more, we might talk a little bit more about this. But, you know, we often talk about how we're living in such an age of depression and anxiety for young people. And when I went back to watch the film, one of my first thoughts was, you know, Cameron, I mean, he is a deeply anxious and depressed kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just interesting to think that even in those moments, like these were kids who were overworked, stressed, bored, pressure by their parents. So as much as we talk about it as being sort of a new manifestation of student experience, it really it was pretty clear that Cameron already fit that role pretty well.
If anybody needs a day off, it's Cameron. He has a lot of things to sort out before he graduates. Can't be wound up this tight and go to college. His roommate will kill him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, should we jump into the beginning?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This first scene, my goodness. I had not realized, like, so many of the quotable Ferris Bueller moments happened in that first 5 minute scene.
Yeah, I mean, John Hughes really tees up the viewer for, one, the kind of person Ferris is, you know, charismatic, clever, and just really, really funny, but also someone who just sort of has disregard for the whole experience of school.
Right, right. So of all those quotes, which one, do you have a favorite?
Oh, God, well, yes. I mean, you know, he's skipping school and he's telling his parents, I really think this was funny when he says, you know, he doesn't want to miss school, he tells his parents. He says, I want to go to a good college so I can have a fruitful life, right?
Yes.
But then, you know, he claims fear of worrying about his test. But then, of course, sort of what he perceives is what he's learning in school as being totally uninteresting and not relevant to his life at all.
Yeah. And as an aside, he doesn't have a car, but he does have a computer, which was certainly more expensive than a car. And that synthesizer in the corner at the time was $6,000,
$8,000. Yeah, yeah. So he wasn't hurting. But
no.
Yeah. I always did wonder, though, like, why does Jeannie have a car?
And he doesn't.
And is she the same age as he is? Are they twins?
No. I was wondering the same thing. Because if she's driving, she's at least 16.
Yeah.
2 years apart.
So I always wondered about that. I've never had that figured out.
Well, they didn't talk about her graduating. They talked a lot about him graduating.
Or not graduating.
Or not graduating,
yeah. So what was your favorite line from kind of those opening scenes?
Well, I think the most quotable part is,
how could I possibly be expected to handle school in a day like this?
Oh, yeah.
So good.
I mean, he looks out, he sees a beautiful day in Chicago, and let's keep in mind, you know, for those of you who are from Chicago, a beautiful day in the spring, it's like,
oh, that's right,
a glorious moment,
yes,
right after weeks and months of being buried under snow. I mean, I completely empathize with Ferris Bueller in this moment.
Well, that's so funny. That never even occurred to me, being a California kid. That's so funny.
So, I mean, it's clear. He's like, a day like this in school is just a waste.
Yeah. I love when he's talking about the step-by-step how to fake out your parents.
Yeah.
And the quote that I had forgotten that I think maybe best summarizes the whole movie is talking about when he goes, you know, you lick your palms.
It's a little childish and stupid.
But then again, so is high school.
It's so good. I mean, it's just a great, great tee up. You know, the other part of that opening, the movie is really about his relationship with Cameron, this friend who is clearly a hypochondriac.
Yes.
Is so anxious, and his whole goal is to kind of get Cameron out of the house and to have this one fabulous day of living large with him. And it's just interesting, the juxtaposition of Ferris and Cameron.
Yeah, this is one of those moments, being, you know, ed tech person that I am, like, I can't help but notice, it feels like the lever that actually gets Cameron out of bed is the, get over here, you have the car. And today Cameron would be like, dude, grab a lift.
Exactly.
Right. That excuse would not have worked.
No way. Ferris definitely has Cameron's number. And I love that scene where Cameron's trying to make the decision of whether or not he should actually buy into Ferris. And he's coming out of the car and he's kicking it. And he's so upset. But of course, in the end, he knows it's going to be a good day.
Yeah. And then not too far from that, they kept to the payphone. I had completely forgotten that scene where Ferris is talking to those two random freshmen.
Who's he talking to?
Ferris Bueller, do you know him?
Yeah, he's getting me out of summer school.
We appreciate you letting us know how you're doing. We got a buzz. Keep good thought, dude.
Thanks.
Shit, I hope he doesn't die. Can't handle summer school.
Wait a minute, give me somebody else.
Yeah, sure, hold on.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Ferris, how's your bod? Oh my God, you're dying?
And I think we can't completely forget, since it's one of the key moments of the early part, is that we see what's happening in his classroom, and
yes,
he's not there.
Right.
Right. And so we get a little glimpse into what life is like at Glenbrook High School. And we get a sense pretty quickly that there's not a lot that's really good that's going on there for kids.
No, it's pretty bleak. It's just like the sit and lecture.
Yeah.
And nobody, I saw like zero students engaged.
Yeah. I mean, Ben Stein starts and you can see it's a big survey class. And of course, he starts by calling roll.
Yeah.
All the way through. And he gets to Anderson. And Anderson looks up and scowls at the teacher and goes,
Anderson, here.
It's one of the great underappreciated lines. And of course, right after Anderson, we get the classic.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
And then, of course, learning that he's sick for the day.
Right. I heard in that spot, and actually didn't hear, I read that Ben Stein was never going to be on camera. He was supposed to be like, you know, Big Bang Theory, like, you know, the mom off screen just kind of shouting. And they cut to him. I don't know why they chose to do that, but they did.
Yeah.
And now he's iconic.
Yeah. It was really his big break.
Yes. Do you want to talk about Rooney?
Yeah. I think the relationship between Ferris and Rooney is probably, I think, at the heart of this movie. It really is the protagonist against the authority figure who is trying to take him down at every moment.
Yeah. And I also loved that as Dean of Students, he saw his goal as like catching them.
Right.
Right. That it was...
It's going to outsmart them.
In so many ways, it's the opposite of what I think administrators can be at schools. And in so many ways, I think we were talking right before we started recording, it's almost the exact inverse of Ferris in every personality trait also.
Yeah. I mean, Ferris is creative and charming and everybody loves him and he's popular and he's got a great sense of humor and he's a rule breaker.
Yes. Yeah. And then even when Rooney decides to kind of break the rules a little bit when he's talking, when Cameron's doing, you know, talking as Sloan Peterson's dad.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. Yeah, you just produce a corpse and I'll release Sloan.
Yeah, and he, you know, that's not the kind of thing he would normally say to anyone, but he's like, I'm going to break the rules too. And it actually didn't matter, but in the moment, it super did not work out for him
no.
at all.
Yeah, not a whole lot really works out for Edward Rooney. And you kind of get the sense that he has been that way his whole life.
Yes.
Like he was the student who probably always followed the rules. And a student like Ferris just makes him crazy.
Yeah. I would assume that in high school, the Ferris of his high school days would have driven him crazy. He's like, one day I will get the Ferris Bueller of my day.
Yeah. It's almost like he's been trying to live this out his whole life.
Yes.
Catching Ferris or the Ferris of yesterday for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeffrey Jones, who plays Ed Rooney, also, in case you didn't know this, had played a role in Amadeus.
We hear you're making an opera from it. Is this true?
And a kind of a similarly kind of, I don't know, greasy, slimy kind of character. And so apparently John Hughes had seen him in that movie and really wanted him to play.
Wanted that style
that
of character.
Style, and thought he could really take that character and reproduce it in the form of Ed Rooney, Dean of Students.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people think he's the principal, which I think is really interesting.
Right,
you know,
and
people,
he's not.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he's just in charge of, well, I mean, depending on how you play Dean of Students, it can be just a gotcha role.
Yeah,
giving out tardy passes.
Yeah.
You know, thinking of like Strickland from Back to the Future.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's really funny. I have a child in high school who goes to a big public high school. And it's actually really amusing to me when she misses a day of school. And usually when she's legitimately sick, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we just forget to call her out. And nowadays they actually call you and they email you and they call you again. They really, like you do not fly off the radar easily. So as someone who's really legitimately forgotten to call my daughter in, I kind of feel for Ferris's mother when she's like, oh, I just forgot. You know, she's having the call with
apologetic.
With Rooney.
Yeah. But then there's Rooney calling. It wasn't the robocall.
Yeah. It was. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Cameron completely blows it. He's like, no, I want you out front with Sloane. And that's how we get to the next step,
right,
with a
course,
Ferrari.
Right. Because, of course, Cameron drives a complete piece of crap.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, he
and
does.
So he says, look, we have only one choice. And we need to take your dad's car.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun fact on that one. It is not a Ferrari. They wrote that into the script.
I can't believe that.
I'm not sure actually why they kept it in the script, because it is super not a Ferrari. I'm not a car guy. I had to read about it. It's an MG that's made to look like a Ferrari.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, I don't think I would have known that, because I'm not a classic car person,
yes,
but it must drive Ferrari people crazy. Like
that would
make me nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, so he takes this car. And of course, this really speaks a lot to Cameron's neuroses. I mean, he is absolutely struck with fear that his father is going to know he's taken this car out. And Cameron deeply believes, once again, in sort of like the relationship of young people and adults, really does believe that his father loves the car more than he loves anything else in the world.
Sure.
And that, you know, if it could get scratched, or what does he say, breathed on wrong, like just the whole concept of taking this car out and putting any mileage, which the dad knows to the
between
decimal.
3 and 4 tenths. Right?
Yeah.
Right, so, but then they get Sloane, they're in the car, they get to the parking garage, and of all the moments in the movie, this was, I think, the biggest, like, ouch moment for me watching. They take it to the parking attendant. It's the first two people of color we see in the whole movie. Before this, is all just white people. And the first thing he says...
You speak English?
What country do you think this is?
Okay.
And as though that's not bad enough to have just such a racist thing to say.
Yeah.
Then the two guys take the car and they go joyriding.
Oh, sure.
Just essentially steal the car.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, aside from like the guy selling newspaper, a few people dancing later in the movie, that's really maybe the only time we actually hear any not white person talk.
And I mean, it is Chicago. Right. We're not talking a city that isn't incredibly diverse. I mean, Chicago is a very racially diverse city. And so to have that, you know, it is interesting because, of course, John Hughes is a really interesting filmmaker in that a lot of his movies set in Chicago, oftentimes really in the suburbs of Chicago, are just extraordinarily white. I mean, there is not a lot of racial diversity. And, you know, we'll obviously, there's no question at some point we'll hit 16 Candles. But the few times he does have characters of color, they're not portrayed in particularly favorable light.
No. Yeah. I think that South Park, of all things, does like the best job of just naming that and having like the one black kid and his name is Token. You know, like that's a lot of that, I think, stems out of the frustrations of John Hughes movies.
Yeah. I mean, the character of Long Duk Dong in 16 Candles,
right,
which we'll see later on, but was a really, for my friends, my close Asian American friends, really found that was a hurtful character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about that. But yeah, so they leave the car, and, you know, I think Ferris Bueller slips them a little bit of money to take special care of it.
A $5 bill.
They head off for the day.
Yeah.
And it's where you get to see all the great adventure.
Yes. Yeah. So they stop off at lunch. and I had not noticed this.
You got this. I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. When the establishing shot, when you first pull up, it's this French place. Chez, and then Q-U-I-S. Qui.
Chez Qui.
Yeah. And so what's that supposed to be? It's actually Shakey's. So it's totally a nod to that. So they have that whole moment
now,
there.
I mean, you have to say, I mean, did you ever eat at a Shakey's pizza growing up?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, every time I go to Spring Q, you have to have at least one meal at the Shakey's buffet
next
to the Palm Spring Convention Center.
Okay. So I never caught that.
Yeah. And then immediately after, Rooney goes off campus trying to hunt down Ferris. And where does he go? He goes to an actual Shakey's.
That's awesome. You know, it's interesting. When I watched that, not only is that just a hilarious connection that I never would have made, so I appreciate that you brought that to my attention. But when he was there and he, you know, he thinks he sees Ferris Bueller, and of course it ends up being this girl wearing a similar Ferris Bueller jacket, and sure, she spits coke all over him, which was a great moment.
Les jeux sont faits. Translation: game is up.
But I couldn't help but think, like, it was the perfect illustration of how uncreative Rooney was. Because, you know, here's Ferris Bueller. He's going to take a day off. He's not going to go down to the arcade and play video games or go to Shakey's Pizza. Like, never in a million years would Ferris Bueller do something so banal. Like, yeah, he's going to do something wild and amazing. And all Rooney could think of is to go to the places that
the Shakey's, you know, across the street, yeah,
would,
yeah,
normally go. And it's like, you're not dealing with a regular truant. You're dealing with Ferris Bueller, right?
Sure.
Right. So, you know, the rest of the day really does play out in this sort of grand fantasy. I mean, there's no way, if you actually realistically broke down all the things that they go do, you could ever do in a single day. And it's just great. Yeah. They get in everything.
I mean, that's almost the best part of the movie, right? Is it becomes this kind of fantasy of what you could do in a day. Like, I've spent 4 or 5 days in Chicago and have not
done
all those things. Right?
Yeah. And of course, probably, you know, the two moments of several moments where he nearly gets caught, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, with his dad right outside of Shakey's.
Yeah.
With the cab.
Yeah.
Right.
There's another moment where he, of course, is at Wrigley Field.
Right.
And originally this was not supposed to be done at Wrigley Field because John Hughes was a huge White Sox fan. But they couldn't get in to film at the other ballpark, so they filmed at Wrigley. But of course, you know, he catches the fly ball.
Yes.
And he is got it on, and it's right at the moment where Rooney's been wiping off this coke that's been spit on him, and so he turns away from the screen.
Yeah.
And there's Ferris catching the ball.
And that's another one of those moments I can't help but think, what would that look like with smartphones?
Oh yeah.
Right? I don't know if Ferris would be bold enough. Probably yes, to share all the things on all the social media.
Kind of
non-day.
You know, you just have to wonder, in today's age, could he have pulled it off? I don't know.
Right. Like, would he have gone with, like, Instagram stories or Snapchat where it would expire in 24
yeah.
hours?
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't post it to his feed, because then Rooney would just be like, oh,
yeah,
you know, at Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
There he is on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, gotcha.
No, he wouldn't have done that.
Yeah. But then other people might have, right? Oh, I saw Ferris Bueller at the thing.
Yeah.
Right, and added him that way.
Yeah. Someone would have shot that picture.
Right. Oh my gosh, I saw Ferris at the baseball game. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, he also almost gets caught by his dad as he's leading the parade. I mean,
yes.
Or his dad is watching it happen from
above.
His office,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's dancing along. You know, he's really getting into the spirit of that moment.
Yeah. And then if we slip out of the chronology of it, there's also the side-by-side cabs later.
Oh, yeah.
And they duck down. Sloan throws on the glasses.
Yeah. And yeah. And Ferris is in there, but his dad is in the cab next door.
Right.
It's pretty brilliant. So all of those moments are just these great, it's the day we all wanted to live in high school.
Right.
Yeah. Of course, we also see Rooney, alternatively, while all of this is going down, Rooney is trying to track down Ferris. And after he leaves Shakey's, the real Shakey's, he goes to Ferris's house.
He does.
Yeah.
And pushes a little intercom. Yeah, I also love when we get back to the whole idea of experiential learning, all of the things that Ferris had to think through ahead of time, all the different phone numbers, all the different answering machines.
The mortuary.
You have reached the Coughlin Brothers mortuary. We are deeply sorry we are unable to come to the phone right now, but if you leave your name and number, we'll get back to you as soon as is humanly possible.
Right. All of those things. And even just, I was trying to figure out in 2019, how would you even do that intercom bit? Because people still have intercoms.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have had to record onto whatever, still maybe even cassette might be the easiest. Mm-hmm. You know, you hit the button, it plays the thing, it pauses. Like, how do you even wire into the intercom to, like, auto reply? It's kind of wild if you stop to actually think through. I would love to have, like, one of our engineering friends actually figure out what that would look like to wire, like, the Ferris Bueller intercom.
Yeah,
gag.
I mean, there were so many. I mean, there's when he has the dummy hooked up to the snoring sounds of his stereo. So when his mother opens the door, she sees him sleeping and hears the snoring.
And even just figures out the mechanics of how to get the weight of the trophy that does that, and the lean and the snore. Like, it's super intricate. And I gotta wonder, you know, had these things been accepted and valued and like risen up in school, how he would have actually behaved in high school instead of just that sit and get Bueller. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my gosh, like, look at this robotics kit that Ferris did.
Yeah, right. For sure. I mean, there's probably some physics involved in that, and definitely some good old-fashioned engineering that he had to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, think of like, we're going to have a new makerspace here at Hillbrook soon. You could almost have a Ferris Bueller's Day Off themed school and actually try and build all of those things. All that type of making and engineering and robotics. Like, those are the things that a lot of schools are now embracing.
Yep.
And yet, that was not the case at his high school.
Yeah, once again, I mean, Ferris actually strikes me as someone who knows a lot, who can do a lot, and doesn't necessarily attribute it to his school.
Right, it's in spite of school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which may be one of the major points of the movie.
Yeah, I also love that if we get back to Wrigley Field, we get the exterior shot that says Save Ferris.
Yeah.
Also, shout out, remember that ska band of the 90s, Save Ferris?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Right?
Yeah. You really love the Art Institute scene. I think it's one of your favorite scenes. And of course, let's give Ferris a little bit of credit, right? He goes to the ball game, he goes to the Sears Tower, but he does have one more traditional sort of educational
moment. He does. He gets his culture on.
Yeah, he does.
For sure. I love that music. It's like the most perfect pairing of what we see and what we hear. It totally sets the mood.
Yeah.
That wasn't
the original choice I heard. I read that, but originally, I think it was another scene. And when it was seen by the original sort of critics, they didn't like the Art Institute scene. And John Hughes changed it to this rendition of the Smiths' Let Me Get What I Want, I think is the song that is being played. And he ends up, it really changed the whole scene. And Cameron sort of really looking at this.
Having his moment. But then also, I love that they even play school. Those kids holding their hands, walking through the museum line, and then the three of them hop in.
Yeah.
So even though he's, you know, again, how can I possibly go to school on a day like today? He still wants to play school.
Yeah. Yeah, he's engaging with the kids on this great moment of a field trip, which is great.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Right, we have the parade.
Yeah.
Donkashane. Donkashane comes up a lot.
Four times you hear it in the film. So starting with Ferris in the shower, of course the parade scene. Rooney sings it.
Yes.
And then at the very end, Jeannie sings it after her rendezvous with Charlie Sheen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. I heard that at some point they had actually written Charlie Sheen's character into the whole movie. And so the mom is in, you know, trying to sell a house for the Vermont people. He's the son of the Vermont people. And so there's this whole backstory that may or may not be real about is actually his parents. And then he ends up getting caught because his parents are like, oh, we're going to go look at houses. And so it was actually Jeannie's parents and then Charlie Sheen's parents.
Well, the whole movie was originally like 2 hours and 45 minutes when it was
first.
Oh, and so they had to cut a lot out. I'm sure that backstory was left
made on the cutting room floor.
For sure. Yeah. But about Donkashane too, apparently John Hughes said that song had just tormented him.
We'd like to play a little tune for you. It's one of my personal favorites. And I'd like to dedicate it to a young man who doesn't think he's seen anything good today. Cameron Fry, this one's for you.
Matthew lip-synced this song. I remember that this was the most awful song when I was growing up. And every time it came on, I just wanted to scream. I wanted to claw my face. And since it was German, and I was taking German in high school, which meant that we listened to it in school, I couldn't get away from it. It just kept appearing.
And so in the end, he just had to put it in to the film.
Oh, that's so fantastic. I also read that John Hughes chose nearly all the music himself. And I was surprised at how kind of well-rounded the music was.
Yeah.
It was not like a classic, just 80s hits sort of thing.
No. John Hughes had a great sense of music. I mean, all of his movies were known for their music. Yeah. At least the movies that sort of, the adolescent movies.
Yeah.
You know, we've kind of gotten through most of the movie. Although I will say there is this great kind of crescendo at the end when Rooney gets to the house.
Yes.
Meets up with Jeannie, you know, has the dog really come after him. Mm-hmm. She knocks him out. You know, he ends up getting his car towed. I mean, just one horrible thing after another, where he just kind of slowly gets defeated.
Right. Ferris runs back at the very, very end, if we fast forward to the end. And then Jeannie ends up catching him at the back door.
And of course, she does, in the end, pick her brother.
She does.
Over Rooney.
Right.
Just to say, no, you know, he drives me nuts and you're still.
The adults will not win today.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. School will not win.
Right. And then we end with like the best line of all time.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
I guess the last thing I would just say is I think it was part, maybe it plays into our rewind. So maybe we can move into rewind. Because yeah, I was just about to say one thing that maybe just always upset me just a little bit about the movie. Well, first of all, I don't love the parade scene in reality. I know, right, a lot of people love it, but it's not, I could have lived without
it. I could have lived without that as well.
Yeah. But the thing that I think really, in some ways, I would have turned back, rewound, figured out a little bit different was, you know, poor Cameron in the end. Like, in the end, he has the day, he takes the risk, but man, when that car thing goes down, he takes all the blame.
All of it, yeah.
And I guess in reality, you know, Ferris Bueller did not hold a gun to his head and say, if you don't take this car out. I mean, he made the decision.
What did I do? You killed the car.
But at the same time, like, Ferris just refuses to take any responsibility for it. And I think in my heart of hearts, that always just sort of rubbed me just a little bit the wrong way.
So what would have happened in your version then?
Oh, I don't know. Because if Ferris had really been caught, you know, that would have been the end of the fantasy.
Right, right.
But I wonder if there was a way that they could have figured out a way for Ferris to somehow chip in or come to some sort of apology to Cameron.
Grown up in some way, maybe?
Or even just apologize to Cameron at some level.
So for me, the rewind, the one thing that really stuck out to me, you talked about that kind of ouch moment with the parking
mm-hmm,
attendants.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine, I was not living in suburban Chicago in the 80s, but can very clearly see it being like just a super white place.
Yeah.
But then when we actually go into Chicago, just to have the only people of color be the people that essentially steal the car, that was rough. Like, mm-hmm, if I could change one thing, it would be that line of like, mm-hmm, do you speak English?
Take it out.
Have a conversation like that could have gone in so many more interesting ways, you know, and even immediately after when they go to Shea Keys, it's just like a super white place to be. Like, dude, get some deep dish.
Yeah.
You know, like the guys, even though they took the car, like could have popped in different ways. There could have been some more interesting things to do to actually have a bit of culture aside from like kind of a stuffy museum and a stuffy like restaurant.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. We're gonna talk a lot about sort of race in some of these movies, race and culture and diversity, because I think one of the things that really became clear to me as we were making this list of movies to review was how few images there are of teachers, especially,
sure,
who are Black and Latinx, who are in roles of authority in these films. And I think it's something really to we'll be digging into that a little bit more over the course of the podcast.
Yeah, awesome.
Hey, this was it.
We've done it. I was about to say another episode, but our first episode.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was really fun to start with Ferris Bueller. It was great to watch it two or three times and to really just remember. It stands up over time.
It really held up. Yeah. Yes, yes.
It really does.
Absolutely.
So, are we going to tell them what's next?
Yes, yes, we are. So, join us next episode as we talk about...
No matter what anybody tells you, Words and ideas can change the world.
So you're going to find us on, I don't know, we should decide the social media, probably, as my mom calls it, the Twitters.
The Twitters.
We should hop on the Twitters.
The tweets. We'll tweet it.
But at the very least,
yeah.
I think just Googling heads down,
two thumbs up
is a good place to start.
And also, don't forget to share this with your fellow educators, your friends who went to school. Because I think you probably have some friends who went to school.
Yes, that is a good suggestion. If you know anyone that went to school, particularly high school,
yeah,
let's narrow it down a little bit.
Yeah, share
this. This would be a good episode for them because we like to talk about movies
that talk about schools.
Yeah.